We're on item 14.
And Harvey Packard, our enforcement coordinator, has already jumped up to the podium and he's available for questions. I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to point out, Harvey.
Well, can you tell us, Mr. Packard, what the highlights are, if there are any of the enforcement report?
Well, as normal, there is a violations listing, and I'll be happy to try to answer any questions in there if you have any. And we talk about the actions that we've taken in April and May, and a little bit of discussion about ag order enforcement, the continuation from last agenda. We have three finalized MMP orders listed there, and we have several more in progress that we'll report on as they get finalized. Something new for that actually started with the last agenda are a table showing ACL actions taken statewide. And we get that from the state board, and we just supply it as an informational item. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Chair Young.
Yes.
I can start. The ag order enforcement, I'm glad to see an update on that because that certainly has been a question. And so I'll try and be real specific in my questions. You say that half of 23, or is it half of 31, of those that received notices have indicated compliance with the monitoring requirements by participating in the cooperative monitoring program. I'm wondering, are they providing proof of having been involved for a period of time, or are they just now signing on and showing proof that they're engaging with the monitoring program at this point?
The actions described here were all for operators who had submitted notice of enrollment but had not paid fees. So they were dealing with what we call non-fee payers as opposed to non-filers. So all of them had enrolled, but at some point failed to pay their fees.
So the monitoring data, it's not affecting the gathering of monitoring data, in other words?
No.
No.
No. And in fact, in that group of non-fee payers are two subgroups. One group are those who elected to do cooperative monitoring, which is ongoing regardless of individual status of paying fees.
Mm-hmm.
And the second subgroup are those who elected to do individual monitoring.
Okay.
So that number is fairly small, and that is that group of 23 that's mentioned there.
Okay. And so of that group, okay, and that's where I get confused because
right.
It says about half of them have provided information that they are in the cooperative monitoring program. So of the 23, you're saying 11, even though they said they were going to do individual monitoring, they've elected to start paying fees?
Right.
Okay.
Many of them said, oh, we didn't really mean to check that box. We meant to join the cooperative monitoring.
Okay. So that leaves 11 that stand with an individual monitoring program requirement, correct?
If that's what the math is. I'm not sure. This is back. I wrote this in June. I'm not sure what the exact numbers are right
well,
now.
Well, okay. So yeah. Let's just say 11. But what are the actions now in terms of their responsibility to meet their commitment or their requirement to conduct individual monitoring?
They're required to follow the terms of the monitoring reporting program that goes with the general waiver.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes annual reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure of all the exact, maybe Lisa could comment on more specifically what the monitoring requirements are, but we expect them to expect them, instead of the cooperative monitoring, to comply with individual monitoring.
So I guess really the question I'm asking is if they haven't provided the data, which means you would assume that they're not monitoring. So either they have the data and they have failed to submit it, or they haven't monitored at all.
Right.
Are there going to be different actions for those two groups?
We haven't gotten that far, but it does present that issue. And it's likely that they don't have the data. I'd say that's the more likely scenario. And you can't go back and collect data for 2009 at right. this point. It's just impossible. So that's an enforcement decision we'll have to make as far as what additional action we'll take or recommend to the board for penalties if we go that far.
Yeah, and I would think that, let's see, since we're not sure of the number, but we're thinking that whatever we do, we would be thinking long-term in terms of a policy, a consistent policy in dealing with those that choose the path of individual report monitoring and then don't fulfill that
right.
those requirements. So we want to be sure we look broadly at that. So the board will have a chance to look at what that policy is, I'm hoping, and that we can also consider that as part of the larger scope in terms of penalties, in terms of consequences. The other question I have is, well, I guess that's really it, so the additional steps. Are there any other categories of violation that you're still sorting out what kinds of penalties and actions will occur?
Well, there's those two subgroups I mentioned. The first subgroup we sent what we call the expedited payment letters to, which is basically a settlement offer. And if they agree to settle, then we've agreed not to recommend any further enforcement for those. So the next steps would be for those who did not settle would be to pursue ACLs or mm-hmm. pursue a recommendation to the board for an ACL.
Mm-hmm.
The 23 individual monitoring, that group, that all we've issued so far is a notice of violation. So we haven't progressed as far with that group. And as you mentioned, they are different, but we'll need to act consistently with those two subgroups. The other group is the non-filers, and that's been an ongoing. We've taken enforcement actions in the past with those, and there are still issues that we need to deal with. Whether that's where that will be on our priority list remains to be seen, but we know it's an issue.
So is it the case that the those that don't take the settlement offer for expedited payment and ACLs are issued, do those ACLs come to the board as individual actions, or is that EO level?
Potentially. You know, we would issue complaints first. They have the option of waiving their right to a hearing and paying the amount recommended in the complaint, or they can take the option of having a board hearing.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Right, and we would list settlements
in the enforcement report. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see the individual actions.
Right, and we already have, you know, mentions, doesn't mention how many, but we have had $29,000 worth of settlements already.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to know that we'll see more detailed kind of look at this, because I think that's an issue that more generally concerns the whole area of managing the agricultural regulatory, you know, set of actions that we're taking now. And I think it's going to be very important. People have been, you know, anxious to see from the first permit how we are going after compliance and noncompliance. So I'm glad that we will see more detail and that it will break it down into these different types of violations so that people understand that it's not just a one, you know, one action, one penalty for all.
I'd like to add one thing. We have another group of violations that is not, it's currently in the works that isn't in this particular report, which is, you might recall we issued 13267 required update on some information through the notice of intent, and that was to submit that information electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And the date for that and the effort to get responsiveness to that request has passed. The date to actually submit was January 31st.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done some additional work to get some other people to have responded, even though it was after the date, and then we still have a large number of
enrolled growers who never replied. So and that's another set of violations that we're working on responding to.
And are you working with the ag community, some of the organizations and the monitoring program group in reaching and identifying the non-responders?
We, in fact, met with Kirk Schmidt from Preservation, Inc. about some of these issues last Friday. So and I guess that's a yes.
So a yes, but is there willingness to assist and work with identifying or finding a general path to identify the non-responders? Because I would think if I were a member of the ag community, so I'm speaking, you know, out of not from knowledge or experience or a stakeholder. I'm not speaking as a stakeholder in this case, but if I were a responder and compliant and I know that there are others that are not participating and not, especially not supporting the cooperative monitoring program, I would want to see that there are the penalties and consequences are taking shape. It takes time to sort it out at the beginning, but once we get the policy in place, I'm hoping that that's something that the ag community also wants to support.
We actually had a discussion about how to make our efforts and what we're up to more well-known, not just through our staff reports to you folks on the board, but more widely in the community. So along the lines of what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, sounds good.
You know, I have along these line a quick question. You know, we talk about non-responder, which then I assume are people who filed paper but are not responding to information requests. But how do we know that all eligible dischargers have filed? Because, you know, you can address the issue of those who filed but have not responded, but how do we know that we do have a certain amount of parties who should be enrolling in the program and have not done so?
You want to try to address that, Lisa? Or, yeah, I don't know. I'll give it a shot. There are sources of records to determine who is farming. Department of Pesticide Regulation reports, Ag Commissioner reports, and we can compare those to the list we have of those who are enrolled. That's our main source of checking. Assessor reports. We have to use those existing databases. There's not one spot to go and say, here's all the irrigated ag operations in the region. Mm-hmm. But there are ways of using databases to figure that out.
Because I think some other sources would be looking at agriculture commodity groups who do have through their membership list of planted acreage. Mm-hmm. For example, you have this available with the wine growers. You have this available with the avocado growers, the citrus, et cetera. You take the acreage, and then you can compare it to your data, because I think that there is a little bit of a disconnect in some areas in terms of acreage. For example, and by the way, so you know, I don't get legally in trouble of discussing agriculture, I more than gladly can go on the other side and speak as a private citizen if that keeps everything on the up and up. But if you, for example, calculate the planted acreage of wine grapes within our district, and that's available through the California Department of Agriculture on the grape report, on eligibility of Tier 1, the actual planted acreage of grapes within our district already exceed the total Tier 1 estimate of acreage. So that doesn't even include avocados, citrus and some other crops, or for example, olives nowadays. So there, I'm suggesting that perhaps a little more triangulation with some of these other source of information may help at least get a sense if acreage-wise, you're in the ballpark.
Right. No, that's good. I'm not sure to what extent we've tried to get lists from commodity groups, but that's something we can look into.
Yeah. I've done that myself, by the way. I took our district And then it's very easily available through the Department of Ag, looking at the planted acreage of grapes and the planted acreage of grapes within this district. Mm-hmm. Already exceeds the estimate of Tier 1 acreage that would be eligible. I'm glad it can.
Just wanted to make a comment in response. I appreciate what you're saying. We acknowledge that our estimates related to the tiering of acres that we've showed you in past meetings related to the draft ag order are underestimating. And what I mentioned about our other category of violations is those estimates were based on the updated acreage information from enrolled growers through this request for them to do it through our online electronic database update. Mm-hmm. So we knew when we have provided those numbers to you that it was underrepresenting the enrolled growers because not everybody updated by the date. We have another slew that have updated since then, and we have several that we absolutely know have not yet updated. So,
okay. Thank you.
Okay, another item. Harvey, on your list of ACL orders issued, California Dairies, would you refresh my memory as to why the order is such a large amount? It's $2 million.
Which one's that?
ACL orders issued, California Dairies, Region 5.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I can't help you there. I don't know much about the other regions and actions, but that would be interesting to find out what they did. Yeah. Huh?
I thought I'd heard about it before, and I just couldn't remember why it was such a big amount of money. But if that's not yours, thank you.
Yeah, it's a mandatory minimum penalty, apparently. They must have had a lot of violations.
Violations, yeah.
Okay, any other comments or questions for Mr. Packard on the enforcement report? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one speaker for this, Darlene Din.
Oh, excuse me, I'm dropping my phone. Good morning, board members, and thank you again for letting me address you. My name is Darlene Din, and I'm an agricultural land use and public policy consultant. There's a couple things I wanted to that I've done in written correspondence, but I still think it's really important for the board to have an understanding. As we look at agriculture, there's some generational issues, and there are still those that because of filling out documentation as it relates on this on an NOI and the computerized statement, there isn't a lot of assistance. I personally do not assist any grower and would never assist a grower because this could be a potential compliance or regulatory, and in my opinion is a legal opinion. And I send them to their lawyers to help them because there are a lot of elderly growers. There are growers who are not as computer literate just because of the age of the grower and their comfortableness in the difficultness of filing. And because they sign under penalty of perjury, I do not feel qualified or it's appropriate that I help, and I actually have asked other consultants to not help unless that they have a legal advice on this. Because should they file improperly, then you could do an enforcement action on them, and I don't feel qualified to do that. So I want to let you know that there is not a much help out there available for growers who are not computer literate, who aren't sure how to fill this out, who have tried to do it on their own and have had challenges. It's very difficult to modify, to change your acreage, to fix the documents. It's unyielding. It's very complicated. I've actually watched one of them do it so I could at least understand to be able to testify or to tell you some of the challenges. And while I appreciate that you're looking at going to a computerized age, that it makes it easier on a regulatory, if you're a small operator, and you're especially an apple grower or somebody who's limited, doesn't have a lot of staff, you don't have a large production, or if you're a small and underfunded grower, that can also be a challenge. And I just, you know, and even if you're a large grower and you change your acreage, it's not user-friendly, it's not easy to modify. So inherently within your own reporting system, this is really difficult. And I just would ask you to really sit down and look at how do you make that work and how do you move forward. I have in the past asked that they could file non-electronically and be able to do their NOI. That doesn't appear to be an option, and I believe as long as you keep that as a sole option for a period of time, you will have people who will not comply, not because they don't know want to, but they just don't know how. And I just think that's a really important aspect. And there are those that, because of the regulatory burden, not just on you but on other, that you're going to get, I believe, more and more of smaller operations that are going out of business. Thank you.
Question for you, Mrs. Din. Can't these people call staff and kind of get a heads up on how they could answer portions of this form?
Yeah, yes, they could. How do I say this tactfully? They would like to have an opinion of someone who is not a regulator prior to doing the opinion of the regulator, because for fear they would say or do something that could put them in jeopardy. Because unfortunately right now the regional board, from an agricultural point of view, there's some challenges with public relations, if I know how to say that politely.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand,
they have to comply.
If a grower said, you know what, I called staff, I spoke to
whomever,
Joe Blow on this date, and I had a specific question about how to fill out this box, and this is the information I put in it, and it turns out that I was ill-advised or did something wrong, and I just need to make a change to it, or shouldn't be held responsible for this, I would think that that would bear a lot of weight.
I think you're probably correct, and I do encourage them.
Do you encourage them to call staff?
Yeah, to talk to an attorney if they don't want to talk to staff, but to talk to staff. I'm just going to be candid in the most polite way I know, is there is some apprehension right now in a general public relations. And I hope that that's polite enough.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I know there has been some complaints of poor communication, but we're going to have to get beyond that.
I know that.
And so,
Chairman, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I understand that. And I just think that my hope is that there's a way that we can sit down as a regulated community and you as the regulators as a general group and find ways to actually move forward to be able to make these things work for the betterment of the public. And we're all humans. I don't feel that apprehension because I have worked with staff in ways, but I feel more comfortable in asking questions. But in all candor, if you're a really good farmer and you're out there working and you don't usually talk to a regulator and you're nervous about what if you say something or you could put your farm in jeopardy, it makes you a little nervous. And especially if you know that maybe right now some of the standards are those that you can't meet, so you're afraid. I'm being candid to the fact that if this is a big deal and it's a big change, and to print something out, to read it, to really study it, to think about it, to then sign it, there's a different level of comfort than if you're not very good on the computer and you have to put something in and it just sucks it into the dark hole and then you can't correct. I mean, I'm just telling you what they tell me, that they feel like they can't look at it, they can't print it, they can't hold it, they can't make sure. A lot of these people, their word is their bond, so they sign something. They want to know that they told you the truth. I just think we have to get through it, and I don't have a solution. I'm sorry.
And whether that's done electronically or just with a paper submission, in the end, they're transmitting something.
The difference on paper, they can read it and see it when they sign it.
Okay.
The system on the computer just sucks their information
in. But can't they print it out before they submit it?
No.
There's no way to do that?
No. Well, and that has them very nervous because they don't know if they made a mistake.
Well, there should be some way that somebody can print a copy that they have just submitted to the board.
Prior to it going in, they want to look at it before they push go. And there isn't a way.
Mr. Thomas?
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that the system that we put in place for all growers to file their information electronically was actually highly successful in getting the vast number of growers to use it, submit their information electronically. And we have all the data on that shows how successful it was. We also had over 1,000 contacts. Our staff had over 1,000 contacts with growers, helping them to fill out those forms and submit that information. It was some people came into the office and worked with our staff. Some people called on the phone. Some emailed. But there were over 1,000.
I'm responding to those that are in your enforcement action numbers.
Okay. Well, hold on 1 second.
So in going through this process and in listening to the feedback that we got from people who were using the system, we documented the issues that they were having and where it was working well and where it was challenging. So what we've done is talk to the consultants who create this system for us, this database system. And it's not just for this program. It's for several other programs, too. And we're now working with them to modify the system to make it more user-friendly. That's going on right now. And so they will be making several changes to it to allow people to update it more easily, to update the information that they've put in, and to add other features to make it user-friendly. And I hadn't heard of the printing issue, but that's something we can certainly look at and add.
Well, that should be done. I mean, I can't imagine anyone of us wanting, submitting something online and not being able to have a paper copy of what we submitted.
You do after you submit. You just can't read it before.
Well, if you made an error, you wouldn't know you made an error.
You wouldn't have made the error till you printed it.
And then how difficult is it?
It's very hard from what I've been told by those. Now, I want to be fair to staff. Those that have staff people and our larger companies that do this all the time, they don't see a challenge. But because agriculture has numerous layers of size and geographic, those that have tried to correct it have been so frustrated because it's not user-friendly. So thank you for working on the user-friendly. And just for sake of a consultant, if I can tell them they can print it before they submit it, it may help them to print it and then call staff because they at least have a document they're trying to work from.
Well, even if you could print it before you sent it, but then the issue would be to correct the error if you found an error.
But maybe that way, if they had a print and paper, they could then call staff to help on that one piece before they submitted it in. I just would ask that you make it be sensitive that this is, for some people, it's very difficult, and for others, they have staff and it's not.
That's one other thing I'd like to point out is that, as you said, Mr. Chairman, people have been filling out information and submitting it to us under penalty of perjury for a long, long time.
Right.
And it's done, it has been historically done in hard copy, but in all of our programs, we're moving towards the e-filing or the electronic information transfer in both directions. And the idea that someone would lose their farm or their farm is at risk because they make a mistake on a form isn't accurate. I don't think that it does anybody any good to say that into a microphone or on news releases to farmers or in any other form. I don't think the board is going to take anyone's farm if they make a mistake on a form.
Well, I didn't necessarily think that would happen either, but, to give her credit, I think that she's identified an area that needs adjusting.
In all candor, I don't say that, Mr. Thomas. I am telling you that an elderly grower in his 80s was very concerned that if he filled this out wrong, because he has heard at the coffee shop that the regional board is taking farms, he would be at jeopardy. I told him that would not be the case. But if he was very concerned about this document, he needed to see his attorney and then talk to staff. The problem is when you have a generation that is not comfortable with computers, and you've asked them to do things, I just think it's important that you as a board know that there is a class of growers who just would need a little bit of help. And if you can set up the program in a way that they can comply, that gives a comfort level, then it also reduces the rhetoric that the regional board is doing something that would put them in jeopardy. So it's a win-win for both you and myself and others that work with the agricultural community.
Listen, both my parents still are challenged in forwarding emails that they get, you know, in cutting and pasting. So I think we tend to lose a sense of how challenging some tasks can be. I mean, you know, we do this all the time, so we can do it in our sleep. There are people that can't do it that readily.
Yeah, like dinosaurs like me.
Just like Mr. Jeffries.
That's right.
I didn't want to use him as an example.
I'll step up to the plate,
actually,
but I'm telling you.
We're available to help Mr. Jeffries
even,
as well.
He doesn't even have email at his house.
No, I do not have email.
So,
thank you.
But I understand, and I understand if you have a senior, you're talking about somebody that's 80 years old. They may be a single-family operation. Yes. That may be a small operational marginal profit in there. And the fear is if they do a document and they do have a fine against them, they could lose their farm.
That is
because they couldn't afford it to pay the fine. And so what alternative is there? And I think we have to assure those people that our staff is friendly. Now, I have heard, you know, from individual people, because I live in a farming community, that there's a lot of distrust. And the information there, they hold that information back because they're afraid that it would entrap them, or that they're not giving them the information. Their interpretation as a farmer to a regulator sometimes is not the same.
Right.
And I think you've heard me say this over and over again in these meetings. We have to be able to talk to the people that we're trying to talk to in their language so they understand. And sometimes that's not easily to be adapted in all cases. Now, what have you found the Spanish-speaking people that are not easily – is this in Spanish as well as in English, these forms?
I can't speak for staff, but I can tell you that there are some that feel that it was very easy to handle, some that didn't. I just think that if you work out the bugs – if we get some form of information back on what has kind of been worked out, if they can print it before, if who they can speak to, and some of the things that you've done, the adjustment, and that's all I'm asking, I believe we can work this out. It's just the sensitivity that I do believe a portion of your area of unreported is not people who want to not report. They either have some technical, some language barriers or some challenges, and if they know how they can comply in a way that makes it for them to understand, I think you could solve a portion of the enforcement action.
That's your local farm bureaus have people to assist these particular farmers?
Yes and no. We're really careful on how we help because it's a compliance
document. I understand.
Then
if you think you're giving legal advice,
right,
it puts you in a bad position.
Yeah. But do we give them information and who to talk to at the staff? Yes. And, you've got local farm bureau.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I just wanted to clarify and just make this a little bit clearer that the issues that Ms. Dinh is raising are known to us, and I appreciate the illumination and the reminder. I also very much appreciate the very specific recommendation. That capability to print before submitting may or may not already be on the list that we're talking to the contractor. I haven't seen the list myself, but staff is working on it in direct response to the hurdles that we have heard from the users, the people that we want to use this, which is largely the enrolled growers. So we know we're working on that. The short-term fix that we are implementing robustly, Michael mentioned 1,000 phone calls, is that if a grower calls, sees after they've submitted that they have made an error, they call our staff, and our staff goes in and talks through with them what the error is and the basis for the error and changes it if it's reasonable and valid and appropriate, and it takes a matter of minutes for that process to happen. The issue of those who do not want to call is still a real issue, and does not in the short term solve that problem, and so that we need to work more creatively on.
Have we figured the solution on changing acreage on rotation when they have 1 year 1,000 acres and next year like 600? Have we that makes that an easy shift and change?
I'm not sure about that specific, but if you want to call us or ask us.
If you could work on that one, it would be really great.
The acreage? When they change?
They rotate crops every year, and it's a little bit harder to get from what they've all told me. It's very hard to go in and just eliminate one farming area. You have to go in and do a lot of work. So if you could make it to where either eliminating or adding sites, that would be helpful.
That is. We're trying to make it a real-time to be able to real-time update information when there are changes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And, Mr. Thomas, does the form allow you to create a draft? Let's say you start filling it out and you want to finish it after dinner. Can it be saved as a draft?
I don't.
Is either that might, if anyone, no, you can't do that?
I'm not, you can't, I don't think you can do that. Now, I don't think you can do that yet
that
either.
Yeah, helpful. Yeah. Thing to do. I mean, I know with some of the Cal State and UC application forms, you can go in, you open an account, and then you might work on a couple of pages and stop, and that also enables you to print out those pages, and then you can finish it over a few day period instead of having to sit down all at once and put all the information in. So I haven't looked at the form, so I don't know how extensive it is, but that might be.
Yeah, we'll definitely follow up on that. And the updating as far as acreage goes and other updating too, because there's lots of changes that go on. There are dynamic operations and people need to make changes over time. And so that we're building that into the system right now.
And does the form itself or the page that leads to the form clearly state who somebody can call if they have any questions?
Yes. And I just wanted to also, I forgot to mention, also in the Spanish opportunities for Spanish and Chinese interpretation if necessary.
If I could add just one minor thing, just downloading the form, being able to download the form as a blank document, I think would also be part of this early print or save as a draft. I know if I'm looking at a form that's more than half a page for the first time, I always print it out as a blank, go through it, see what information I have to gather, and prepare myself. I might even fill it out in pencil and give myself a chance to work on it, hard copy. And I'm very computer literate, but when I'm committing my personal information and business information, you know, it's not easy to assure that you've got your numbers, you know, ready. So,
question.
I was going to add or supplement to, you know, the comment you made, Mr. Chairman, is that I think as part of this agriculture order, you know, there is a social equity element that we all have a responsibility to consider, and therefore the more senior, you know, representatives in agriculture certainly need to be considered as well as individuals where English is not their primary language. I would say also then, in many rural areas, agriculturists do not have access to DSL. You know, I'm going to make a case in point here. I live only 5 minutes away from the headquarters of the Central Coast Regional Quality Control Board, and it took me 2 years of hard work with my landline provider to convince them that I should be able to get DSL. So, you know, sometimes we... You know, some of us live in cities and we take it for granted. And as the ag order and tier system become developed, the amount of data input is going to increase significantly, which then the downloading and the ease of providing the data information is going to become even more critical. Because right now we're speaking about, you know, some of the challenges associated with just the enrollment form. So I think that's a very important point to consider to make this as user-friendly as possible. Thank you.
Okay. Danny Merkley.
Thank you, Chairman, members. Don't want to beat a dead horse, but I did want to point out this is not unique to this region. The last year and a half, I've spent an inordinate amount of time, phone calls, emails with California Farm Bureau members trying to fill out electronic reporting for the State Water Board. And it's something that's evolving. It's a new process. It works fantastic if you understand it. There's a steep learning curve for staff as well as for the regulated community. So it's going to take some time to work through all of that. There is that fear by many, especially the older farmers and ranchers out there, that they will lose their farm. It's not necessarily a reality, but it's a real perception in their view. And I'm not normally in a position in this job to try and defend the water board or the state water boards, but I find myself doing that quite often, trying to dispel some of the black helicopter things that are out there, the theories and the concerns that are out there. But I have a unique perspective because of my previous employment. So additionally, I don't know the dynamics financially and whatnot, but because of what the State Water Board is doing for surface water diversion use reporting and some of the other electronic reporting that they're requiring, there may be a way to get some assistance. I don't know contractually how that would work with who you all are contracting with for this stuff, but there may be a way to get a little guidance or assistance there. There might be someone in the room that would have a contact at the State Water Board.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Kirk Schmidt would like to move his card to this item.
Okay.
Since this is what he wants to talk about.
Okay, Mr. Schmidt, but it's Kirk Schmidt. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairman Young, members of the board, Ms. McCann. Kirk Schmidt, Reservation Inc. We have addressed you since 2006, at least twice a year, on the condition of the NOI database. At best, it's been sorry. It has gone from having people input by college students who were unsupervised, where they felt that the last name of farm companies was either farm or Inc. We worked hard to rectify that. And indeed, Preservation Inc. was the primary mover in making many of these changes because starting in 2006, we shared access to the database with Region 3, and we made changes and advised Region 3 staff of changes as to contact information, acreage, and tailwater acreage. Until the spring of 2010. Preservation Inc. is dependent on the information in the database because we use this to bill growers for participating in the cooperative monitoring program. To some extent, your office is also dependent on this because you receive 12 cents per acre for everybody who we bill. It's in your best interest that we bill the maximum number of people possible. In 2009, we billed the most, which was 399,000 acres. This past year, we billed about 380,000 acres, and I passed out a letter to you outlining all this. It's actually a series of letters. However, the new database, the new electronic database, only has 277,000 acres, which is a drop of over 30% from the top of 2009. Now, we have worked with staff, and staff has been willing to work with us. I'm not saying that there's a reticence to cooperate. But I met with Ms. McCann and Mr. Briggs and Angela Schroeder on Friday to talk about this very issue. At the time, it was, I have to say, revealed to me that everyone who enrolled in the original NOI is still enrolled, and that everybody who re-enrolled in the electronic database is enrolled. And the only difference is if you enrolled in the electronic database and were in the previous, if you did not re-enroll in the electronic database, you're subject to potential fines or penalties because you didn't comply with the 13267 letter. which is all well and good. There's been a total lack of enforcement on this type of issue in the past, which I don't feel we have time to go into. But what has happened, there are now two separate and distinct databases with conflicting information, which make it impossible for Preservation, Inc. to accurately bill growers for the acreage that they have. And indeed, these growers, who many times re-enrolled, do not know that the information in the re-enrollment database is fatally flawed. For example, there is a grower in King City that we billed for this year, for 2011. We billed him for 7,100 acres. And he paid us for 7,100 acres because that's what he's farming. However, in the new eNOI database, he has 320 acres. Now, there's no way for him to know, and this is a grower that's big enough with staff and people to work through these things, but there's no way for that grower to know that they incorrectly filled out the eNOI information because nothing came back to them. And indeed, one of the commitments as part of the enrollment process is that after you were through enrolling, you would receive a notice of enrollment back from Region 3. No notice of enrollments have been sent to anyone who is enrolled in this process. Now, the biggest single problem with having two distinct databases is that there can never be any accuracy. And there can never be certainty about, for example, what Preservation, Inc. should bill for the 2012 year. Now, if Preservation, Inc. bills for 380,000, 390,000 acres, we will have to ask the growers to increase their fees by 80% for the 2012 year, assuming that the MRP will be adopted with the new ag waiver for the 2012 year. However, if the acreage that we bill for is 277,000, we would have to increase the rates to the growers by 140%, which is signaling to them that there is a moral, that not a moral, the moral of the story is to not enroll in this program because, one, your fees go up and there's no consequence to those people who have not enrolled. In the new NOI enrollment program, you have 125 growers who enrolled to do their self-monitoring. No one has done self-monitoring ever. Of the people that were cited with certified letters in April of this year, some of them thought that they were part of the cooperative monitoring program because since 2006 they've been paying us, and so they were a part of the cooperative monitoring program. The other people who didn't call our office to say, can you please show that we've been paying, haven't done anything since 2006 and have just skated. And there's no enforcement on this. But the thing that is going to be the most significant thing, in my opinion, to bring it back to a point where we had the highest level of accuracy, which was in 2009, is to allow Preservation, Inc. access to the database to help make the changes for the growers so that we can reunify the databases and have one database that's going to be a viable, effective database, not only for Preservation, Inc., but for the region, because this is the basis that you have for the entire ag waiver. If there is no database, you have no foundation upon which to build an ag waiver that is very, very, very data intensive. And if we can't keep track, if you can't keep track of addresses and acreage, it's impossible to keep track of whether you're in Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and people who have multiple farms, they will have farms that are in Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, and yet the database now cannot keep track of the total amount of acreage that these farmers have. So the proposal that Preservation, Inc. has made is that we would, with our expense, work to make some corrections in the database if we have access to it. This would relieve your staff of the burden, or some of the burden, of overseeing this. We believe that working with our computer consultants or cooperatively with your computer consultants, develop a system where when changes are made, a document is delivered to your office showing that it's been signed under penalty of perjury, because even the electronic filing requires that you print the document. Unfortunately, you have to print it after you've completed it, and then you have to sign it and send it in. You still have to send in the paperwork. So when you send in the paperwork, this completes the process. The whole purpose of doing electronic filing is to reduce staff time. If Preservation, Inc. is willing to take some of this burden, that has the same benefit to you of reducing staff time, and you would still get a piece of paper signed under penalty of perjury by the grower. And we've talked to Dave Paradis, and he believes that this is possible from your end. We've talked to our computer consultants, and we believe it's possible for our end, but right now there are two databases maintained in Access, and they're inconsistent. One has 25% fewer people in 26% fewer acres. If this is not remedied, I don't see how you're going to be able to effectively go forward with this a very complicated ag waiver that you're going to be discussing next month.
How did the grower who was farming 7,000 acres submit a form that showed he only was doing 350 acres? How did that happen?
I haven't talked to the grower who did this, but I believe he added additional acres. Most growers with farms that size end up going through different acreage, so they'll add 300 acres and they'll drop 400 acres just because of their crop rotations. And this is in the past, up through 2009, there was an annual update form that was sent by your office to all of the growers to update. And so many of the growers felt inappropriately, but did feel that this was where you're supposed to update it and not put in all your acres. And to address the issue about the ease of updating, if this grower had 7,000 acres in your database and wanted to add 300 acres, they would have to input all of the previous ranches again, plus the new ranches, in order to just add the new ranches. There is no capability in your present database to just add new ranches. The website has improved in that now you can read the form online before you fill it out, but this is an improvement that occurred before the end of the filing period in January 31st. At that time, the only time you could look at the form was actually on the screen, although some ag associations were able to do screenshots and distribute. So we're making an offer. Preservation Inc. is making an offer of this in our self-interest to keep our revenues up so we can keep our costs down to the other growers that I think would be beneficial to your region and would be beneficial to the overall ag enrollment process because it would provide more consistency and hopefully more reliability. And indeed, this is what we did for 4 years.
Okay. Ms. McCann, any thoughts or comments? I mean, I know this is just public comment, but it'd be nice to know. Apparently, we got these two databases. They don't jive. There's some problems.
There's databases and there's data, and we have all the data we need for enrollment, for billing, and to access for enforcement and follow-up for violations. They are not perfect, and we're in transition. The layers about the issues are complicated and many, so I don't want to go into any details, but we are again, same story as we were talking about earlier, we are working on how to make them more useful for everybody who needs to input to it and how we get information out of it and how it works best to make sure that the cooperative monitoring program can be implemented. If you have specific questions, I'll try to answer them. But
well, how about their offer to kind of assist with maintaining or managing the database? Is that
we are talking about some ways that the important information that needs to be updated more frequently that Preservation Inc. staff have access to in their outreach with growers can be done and verified and reported to us, as well as how we can be sharing that data and allow them to look at the important fields in the database in real time or any time they need to in order to update or do budgeting or do billing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought we came to agreement on Friday on this issue, and that by providing real-time access to the fields that you need to see, and you pointed out you don't need to see all the fields and all
that's
that.
That's correct.
And so I thought we'd resolve that issue on Friday. Sounds like you've changed your mind in the meantime.
Well, no, can I address that? No, I didn't change my mind. One of the things that was startling to hear on Friday is that I came into the meeting on Friday with the belief that only people who re-enrolled electronically were in the ag waiver and people who were previously enrolled were not in the ag waiver. And during our meeting on Friday, an hour and a half into the meeting on Friday, I was told that if you enrolled in the original database, you were in the waiver, and the only difference between the original database and the new database is you could be subject to enforcement because you failed to comply with a 13267 letter. The current database has more flaws in it than the old database, and there are over 120 growers that are new growers representing 11,000 acres that have not been given billing identification numbers yet and are just listed as pending. So we can't bill them. What we should be doing now, as Preservation Inc. should be doing from a business point of view, is sending supplemental billings to these growers who are participating in the who believe that they have enrolled for 2011, but we can't bill them for 2011 because there's no unique identification number, which is the AW number. The idea of just looking at the information was fine, but then we came to a next step, which say, well, if we look at the information and there's a mistake in the information, then what do we do? And so while it's very important for us to look at the information, Preservation Inc., which has a board of directors exclusively of farmers, has an obligation to the farmers to only bill them for their actual acreage. Fortunately, this year when we billed them by taking information from the new database that we received for enrollment for people who enrolled before December 3rd, the old database, and we combined this and we sent out bills, we received calls from multiple organizations who said we underbilled them by thousands of acres. Kevin Merrill, who's the president of Preservation Inc., was underbilled by 1,400 acres because in the new database, one of his ranches was omitted, and it turns out it was moved to pending, even though it's always been in the ag waiver. And so I think that you have a database that has, I mean, it's fatally flawed. There's no dependability in the database, and now that you have two parallel databases, just having online access to see is helpful. But it's not going to cure the problems in the database. Preservation Inc. has no interest in anything in your database beyond the billing information, the contact information, and the number of acres, because all our goal is to bill people for participating in the waiver. It's quite possible to put a firewall so we can't see any of the other data. And indeed, when we shared the entire database, we didn't look at any of the other data because it wasn't beneficial to us for our goal, which is doing monitoring, which we can do without the database, and to bill.
Hold on 1 second. Roger, what can we do to get past this? And I mean, I don't know, do we have, you know, our staff typically are not highly computer literate to deal with these kinds of things. It's not a negative comment, but, you know, they're engineers and biologists and what have you. This seems to be something that should be very fixable in the short term so that we can get this beyond us, behind us.
Yeah, like I said, I thought we actually had agreement on this point because Kirk mentions an hour and a half in the meeting he learned something. Well, we met for a couple of hours, and so I thought we're squared away. We can talk some more about it because it's not just an IT issue. There's an overall business rule issue in terms of who can change the database and who has control of the database. And frankly, that's one of the problems we had before is that that was ambiguous and being changed by Preservation Inc. without our knowledge.
Okay. No, so that's, we've always provided information on every change. We footnoted it in the database. We've identified every single change and documented both in the database and in paper copies to you, so we've established an audit trail for every single change we made since 2006.
So
Dave, just to finish this, Dave Paradis believes that there's a solution for this, and he's worked with your office extensively on computer systems, and he believes that having two parallel databases is probably the worst-case scenario you can have.
I just want to know how staff is going to get this behind us. That's all.
Yeah, and, I mean, and
you're going to solve this. You're going to solve it. Let's do it sooner than later, and
right.
So that we don't have these issues of incompatibility or them billing for the wrong number of acreage.
Right. So we met Friday. One of Kirk's requests was to have a letter immediately pointing out that, as he said here today, the folks who simply failed to update through the electronic notice of intent are still actually enrolled. He said that would be a huge help. We got that letter to him by Tuesday, I think it was. And as Michael pointed out, we are following up with this issue of not being able to easily update the information. That's part of the work that we now have underway in cooperation with the state board and their contractor. These other issues that you brought up today, that have come up today, I think we'll make sure that those are covered in this update. And so far, every time these things have come up, the folks who are the IT experts have said, oh, yeah, that's easy. We can do that. So I think that we just need to make sure that we have all the issues, and then we'll be able to resolve them. So if printing out the form after it's filled out and submitted is a problem as opposed to being able to print it out before. I think those are easily resolvable issues. And I agree, it's not good to have two databases. That's why we're trying to consolidate that with the one electronic notice of intent. So I think we have to continue to work with Preservation, Inc. to resolve these issues. I thought we were squared away, and Kirk went away happy Friday. He's changed things a little bit.
Apparently you didn't have the right perception on how Mr. Schmidt left
right.
office, so I can't comment otherwise on that. But
can I add something? Yes. A little more definitive than how Roger just depicted it.
Yeah.
The potential fixes for Preservation, Inc. and Kirk and his staff specifically to be able to see the fields they need to see and some of the concepts and other ways of sharing data or providing, I would say, regulatorily acceptable business rules for how to make changes and document those changes are on the list of the things that Angela Schroeder is speaking and already started speaking specifically to the contractor about, along with these other changes to make it more user-friendly. So I think we actually did respond specifically to...
We're on the road. Staff is on the road to address it.
Yes, I think so.
What's your anticipated completion date?
Weeks.
Weeks?
Weeks.
Okay.
Maybe a couple months.
By the end
but
of
that's,
August.
You know, that's, you know, we're talking about IT people who have priorities in Sacramento as well, but that's our hope. I want to point out one other thing because I want to make sure that you're really clear. Kirk used the term re-enrollment database. The current new database is not a re-enrollment database. It was intended to have two purposes in the short term. One was updating information, which right away means because we didn't have all the former data loaded into it, that there was confusion about new data versus everything being re-entered. And the second thing is that it's a transition to all of our records being in one single electronic database. We just couldn't get it all done at the same time in one few month period. So we were looking for an update to information through this online, not enrollment for the sake of identifying who is enrolled and who is not enrolled and therefore in compliance with that aspect of the waiver.
Mr. Hodgin and then Dr. Hunter.
Seems like we have all the issues on the table. The staff is working on it. It seems to me that this is something where the staff just needs to resolve the issue. Mr. Schmidt has to be happy here. And the board would simply like a report back as to how you've resolved the problem. I don't think our discussion here is going to resolve it. You have to work out the details.
And Preservation Inc. is quite willing to continue to work with staff. I apologize if I left Mr. Briggs with a misimpression of absolute satisfaction when I left his office. I probably was smiling because it was a Friday.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Yeah. Having worked on websites and all kinds of interactive stuff and not being a computer IT person myself but being a user, I'm just wondering, and because the nature of the problems you've brought up today, I agree with you. I think these are huge. And considering the impact is ultimately that the cost of the cooperative monitoring program might have to increase to the individual participants because you don't have accurate numbers. So that's huge, and I agree with you. But I'm curious. Don't we have a beta testing phase in this? I mean, these changes are being made, and improvements are being made in July for a process that ended in January. I mean, why are we hearing about this now? If these are critical changes to be made, I would like to propose to Mr. Schmidt, and I think Darlene Dinn is still here also, if you could take back to your network that there should be, once these changes are made, there should be some folks that sit down, and you should have in your web access a place for tests to occur by farmers who are willing to do that. Not by the IT folks, because they're looking at their own design. They're not going to see where the questions and confusion might come up. And I would urge that to be a step that occurs as soon as in August, as soon as you know you have these changes made, and call it a beta testing phase where you've got some of the users that sit down at different computers, different folks, maybe in, sit down in partners, et cetera, and go through the changes and see how it works and get the feedback coming back immediately, not 6 months later. You know, this isn't necessary. We should have a better, quicker process for identifying these. This is just part of how these systems and forms are developed and tweaked. It's a constant process. So let's work that into the design for it not, you know, getting them rolling in ways that give us feedback right away.
One of the things that Angela Schroeder proposed and Lisa McCann proposed on Friday, which was a very positive proposal, was to allow people to edit their information that was in the database. Right now, you can't do that. You have to re-input the entire form. So if you wanted to add a ranch, you'd have to add all the other 11 ranches. This is going to become a very crucial issue if the ag waiver with the new tiering process is adopted, because there are growers who in the past have shown that they have one farm, this 3,000 acres, when in reality they have multiple farms that are going to fall into multiple tiers. They're going to all try to go in and amend their registration by breaking out these farms, and the system is at this point not able to allow these editing, so that getting the ability for people to edit in real time is the key factor here. Preservation Inc. would actually prefer not to have any of the editing rights or privileges if we were certain that the information in the database was correct. Mm-hmm. We have two full-time employees and a part-time bookkeeper, so we're quite happy to have the well-funded state of California keep on top of these things.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. There's a specific case where when the database is redesigned, the modification is made, and you're told, okay, you should be able to, as a grower, you should be able to go in and edit acreage, add new sites, et cetera. There should be a period of time where there's a formal process, and you get some of the users, some of the regulated communities sit down, who volunteer to sit down and go through a test. It's not that they're actually trying to submit their form, but they're testing it for us so that we see, is it actually working to the intent and meeting the need? If we have that, then I think that would assure that what you're after is ultimately possible on the broad scale. If we don't have that test, we're hearing in bits and pieces, and it takes a very long time for that kind of information to filter back. And as Darlene pointed out, it creates a whole bunch of rhetoric that is really unhelpful and counterproductive, both to staff and to the general relationship with the ag community. I think, you know, that's not something we can...
I think however they want to work it out with getting this information together, we'll leave it up to them to do. Your suggestion might be helpful to them. They may come up with something else. And
well, but I think we
need to let them work out how they're going to get this resolved.
Right.
And so we'll go along with that as long as they can get it resolved.
Well, I'm putting it on the table so that staff also considers that this is part of a process that could help assure that we understand what the problems are
right.
sooner than later.
Right.
That's all okay. I'm after.
Mr. Schmidt, would you send me an email, but I want you to send it to Mr. Briggs, directed to Mr. Briggs 30 days from now on August 15th, and just give us a status for your perception of how things are coming along, harmonizing the databases and getting to the solutions to these problems. And then Mr. Briggs can forward it to the rest of the board.
We'll be happy to do that, and Preservation Inc. will also do an analysis of the differences between the two databases and provide that to your office as well.
That'd be fine. We don't need a letter. You don't have to go to that trouble, but an email is fine. It'll be much faster. And, you know, do it well in advance of the next board meeting so that we would have time. That's why I'm asking August 15th to read everything without having to skip over anything.
I'd be happy to, but I think your next board meeting is totally full with the ag waiver.
It is. So, I know. Okay.
Information.
Hopefully we can reserve it. We can take care of it so that you have a truly a two-minute item, this an update.
Yeah, I would like not to have to worry about this at our next board meeting.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Some of these issues that Mr. Smith has brought to us is not new. He has brought to us before.
Right. Right.
And I think he's asking from this board some help to resolve some of these issues. And I think the staff is working on it, but it may not be as fast as it needs to be completed. And I think for them to exist and do the things that we've asked them to do, he needs the funding. And the only way he can get the funding is have the legitimate acreage inputted so he can bill appropriately. Without that, his organization cannot exist. And I think that's what he's been saying for over a year or so, that I can remember the times that he's brought. Now, there's some new issues that have come up since then, but I think the basis is his response to us is it's not working, and we need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to fix it now and not later.
I think he hears our support in getting this resolved.
Can I just remind you of one more thing?
Yes.
I think it is you can hold your technical staff accountable for the issues and the urgency, but one of the time delays is going to be the state board IT staff's capabilities and timing. So we can't define their priorities or their schedule, but we have great support and are in great contact with them. And my comment to you, Chair Young, about timing was based on what they told us, but we have not yet vetted an entire list of all the needs and changes or all of the issues that came up just last Friday with Kirk, nor did we account for a beta testing time frame quite as robust as what Dr. Hunter, at least my impression of what Dr. Hunter was saying. These are all great ideas, and we've got them, and we will incorporate. But again, even if we get that list nailed down and we're all happy with what we're going to do tomorrow, we'll still have to wait for them to be able to actually physically make the changes, make it available for us to put it out for testing, et cetera.
Well, so that's why a status report from Mr. Schmidt in 30 days as to his perception of where we're at, I think, would be helpful, as well as staff's response to it.
Hopefully we can prepare a joint memo to you showing that we're in uniformity and agreement on all issues.
Oh, please don't do that.
But, Mr. Chair, we also have a state board member present today.
Yeah.
Hopefully that she can help us on end of the state board issue, that we need to have this resolved as soon as possible.
I saw Ms.
I know she's
Bobby
taking
Weber
notes
taking
there.
Copious notes.
And I did.
Going to get on the phone.
And
and
usually I am heading back to Los Angeles when I leave your board meeting. I actually am going back to Sacramento, so I'll be in Sacramento all day tomorrow, and I have nothing on my agenda. So I think I will be talking to the IT folks too, and I assume you'll have the details, but I will. Strongly emphasize the importance of getting this resolved quickly, particularly because of the ag waiver.
Right.
So,
and is this the contractor that you were speaking of? And you said contractor helping us. Is that?
Yes, but they're state board. Yeah, they're state board staff, but they have a contractor who does the IT. And
okay.
Just to make sure you know, Fran, it's the GeoTracker.
It's
associated with GeoTracker.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
I will
actually let Roger know. What I learned tomorrow.
Good. Okay.
So. Well, you thought you had a free day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now something's on my agenda.
Okay. Steve Schimmick, last speaker for this item.
My name is Steve Schimmick with Monterey Coast Keeper and the Otter Project. I'll be very brief. I don't want to address the technical issues and the differences between the databases. I would like to address the issue that it is my understanding that the rollout of the electronic NOI was actually very successful, that you had a very high number of people that electronically filed, and that it was wildly successful in terms of what one would have expected for an electronic rollout of such a form. So it's my understanding that it really worked good. I think that there have been problems, and I think that we can all acknowledge that there are barriers of communication in a variety of ways. But I think that I think we also need to acknowledge and we need to commend people like Ms. Din, the California Farm Bureau Federation, the other ag associations, the local farm bureaus, the commodity groups, and a number of nonprofits that actually offered help and clinics for people that on how to fill out the electronic NOI. So there was help. And I think that that help should be commended. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, that completes this item. Correct? Okay. Okay.
Chair Young?
Yes.
Can I just add one last comment, just for the record? We received a written memo, or a letter, I suppose it is, from...
from Mr. Schmidt?
No, I'm sorry. I'm questioning the letter that we got a copy of during the break that's sitting here. I just want to clarify what that letter is. It looks like Preservation, Inc.
It is.
To you. Okay.
And it's on what he just spoke about.
And it's about what you just spoke about, correct? So we each have a letter documenting the issues. Because of the letter. Yeah. Well, I thank you for putting it in writing, though. I just want to acknowledge that. Right. I see a graph there, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Hunter. I passed them out, but I forgot to mention that you had them.